Hartelijk welkom bij jullie vergadering en bij belangrijke. Onze gasten vandaag is National Treasury. En ik neem aan dat allemaal hulle presentation heeft. You pushing it trying like this. I assume, honorable members, that we all have treasury presentation. It's about a 3-pager, 4-pager presentation from treasury. And it's probably the beginning of the last mile of the road. After treasury, it is the AG tomorrow, and after the AG, members of the committee will go back and incorporate everything that has been said to us and present a bill to the National Assembly. So that is the road ahead. We had, I think for the past 2 months, asked Treasury and the AG to do behind the scenes work. So we're hoping that the next 2 days are going to be smoother than when we had people that had not had this kind of interaction with the stakeholders in the past. But we will hear Treasury. The way it operates is that you will present, and having presented, you will then field questions from the committee. We've indicated to everybody that met us over the past week that whilst members are robust, it's by no means adversarial. It's because we want to understand what is going on, and we want to, at the end of the day, when we present to the National Assembly, one, that it stands constitutional muster, but secondly, that it stands the test of time, that we don't want to be making amendments every 5 months or every term in terms of the AG's report. So it's all those things that we will be looking at when you do your presentation. Let us also indicate that our... fine. Let us allow you to do your presentation, and then members will raise whatever needs to be raised. Because I think we've covered lots of ground. Let's hand it over to you. I'm not sure how much time you have. Before we do that, let's introduce each other so that we know who we're talking to. Starting here with this young man from KZN.
Good morning, Jan. Thank you for the compliment on a Tuesday morning. My name is Naren Singh. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Excuse me. Alan McLaughlin. I'm also a member of this committee.
Molweni Ntombo Mente, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Buisela Kedis, director of the committee.
Morning. My name is Polisim Koyed Advisor.
Morning. I'm Dasha Kasson, parliamentary legal advisor.
Good morning. Fatima Ibrahim, parliamentary legal advisor.
Goedemorgen, heren en dames. Mijn naam is Kimi Makwetu, de auditeur-generaal van de Republiek van Zuid-Afrika.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Eugene Zungu. I'm the national leader at the Office of the Auditor General.
Morning, I'm Penny Ramwezisi from the Auditor General.
Morning, everyone. Marissa Vitsanat, also from the IJ's office.
Good morning, Ariel Cumbin, Auditor General as well.
Morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Alice Miller, Corporate Executive in the Auditor General.
Good morning, I'm Audrey from the Auditor General's Office.
Good morning, colleagues. I'm Kabiru Kangare, a legal advisor from the Auditor General.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Colin DeVere, National Treasury Officer for Accounting General.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Zanele Kunyelo, Acting Accountant General, Commissioner Treasury.
Good morning. Inti van Skoor, Chief Director, Dennis Lyson, National Treasury.
Good morning. I'm Cindy Pilot, Deputy Secretary.
And my name is Vincent Smith. I chair the committee, and next to me is the PA, otherwise known as Mother Sutu. Now that we all know each other, we can get into the robust discussions. I don't know how much time you need, especially. We've given everybody else 15 minutes. If that's good for you, then we will also give you 15 minutes to about 20 past, but if you need to go a bit longer, we'll allow you. But for now, we will give you 15 minutes. If you can, sorry, Mr. Singh.
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much. I just want to know if the this slide presentation includes the submissions made in draft 30 that you've given us, so we don't have to look at two documents. There was an original submission, so we can look at this. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Good morning again, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, and also the Office of the Auditor General. I would like to thank the committee for inviting National Treasury to come and present our side on the bill. And first, what I would like to is an introduction that our papers. We have presented to you a word letter, but we have this PowerPoint. Possibly, if we can all use this one for purpose of this presentation, the PowerPoint presentation, and our comments from National Treasury will talk to the investigating undeserved outcome, audit outcome, the constitutional mandate of the Auditor General of South Africa, the areas of the recovery of losses, and the 1% audit fees that is charged to National Treasury when other auditors are unable to fulfill their outstanding fees, and the financial implication of the bill, and possibly end up with what we say is our proposal in which we think this bill can be implemented. But as an introduction, I would like to place on record that National Treasury is supportive of any initiatives of good governance, of transparency, of proper financial management of state funds, and the effective and efficient utilization of state funds. We support any initiative that will support in that, to the effect that maybe the committee members might have seen a lot of increase of reported irregularities in the recent past. That is, to us as Treasury, we didn't see as an indicating that these incidents are increasing. Since 2010, National Treasury has been involved in dealing with forensic investigation and supporting law enforcement agencies, assisting them also to have proper case law that will ensure that PFMA section and MFMA sections are utilized in the charging of offenses by accounting officers. To that extent, we have at National Treasury since 2010 did investigations that are more than 100 cases that are sitting with law enforcement agencies. Those cases, we have been sharing them with the Office of the Auditor General, because some they come as early as 2000, some they come as early as 2005. So we have produced those reports that have informed, in most cases, the disclosure of irregular expenditures that were never identified in the past. So some instances of disclosure or certain irregularities are not currently relating to transactions or things that were done in that year in which the audit is conducted. So as a result, with this treasury drive, it has increased the reporting of unauthorized and irregular expenditure, because we're looking at the full tender from the date it started up to the time that the payments were made, and we accumulated all. The case that is in common, that possibly was reported recently by AG to have increased irregular expenditure in the municipality, was the Nelson Mandela Bay, where there was 2.5 billion of irregular expenditure relating to integrated public transport system that was implemented there since 2005. When National Treasurer came, they uncovered this irregular expenditure, and we are always sharing our reports with AG to make sure that they are taken into consideration in the financial statement for purpose of disclosure. With that, we also participate in the anti-corruption task team to ensure that there is no duplication of effort, to make sure that all the cases are properly investigated. But however, our concern as Treasury is the capacity of the law enforcement agency, that many cases are fully investigated, there is even a charge sheet, but the problem is there will be no court available for the case, there will be no prosecutor available to take the court, and sometimes where we found to be the challenge is where accounting officers are refusing in some cases to register cases for further investigation. But coming to this bill, our comment is starting with clause 2B, subsection 1B in section 5 of the Act, the proposed power for the AG to refer under the outcome for investigation, especially if conducted by the AG, pose a risk to the AG independence. So where we are saying here, if AG is going to be involved, possible, in the actual doing the investigation, it might pose some independence, because AG now will be more concentrating on doing investigation rather than doing the audit. The international auditing standard clear that the provision of assurance and non-assurance by a firm to one client can impair independence, and further set out evaluation that should be performed and safeguard that must be in place to reduce the risk to an unacceptable level. So National Treasury still feels that if the clause is enforced, there will be duplication of roles of accounting officer and accounting authorities as set out in the Public Finance Management Act and the MFMD. Then, secondly, AG, in comment one, this continues, the AG audit procedures are based on a sample basis. So what we mean by that is that when AG is doing the audit, it selects a sample, a list of all payments that have been made in that particular year, and then regard them as the unauthorized expenditure. Whereas when the irregularity is discovered, it means the whole tender is irregular. It should have been considered whether there was a sample selection from one year on another. All the transactions that relate to that particular tender should be classified as irregular expenditure. So if the irregular is going to be considered on an annual basis of what AG has found in terms of the sample of payments, that possibly is some area that needs to be addressed in terms of the approach in which the AG will take in its audit, in making sure that the whole population is considered for irregular expenditure. So National Treasury remains unclear on how a duplication of it by the affected entities itself or external bodies such as Special Investigation Unit and Public Protect will be avoided. We have noted that the 100 proclamations that were issued over possibly for 10 years to the SIU, that cuts across the same payments that AG might have disclosed as irregular expenditure or unauthorized expenditure that are currently under investigation. And also we have noted that there are also cases that are with law enforcement where the law enforcement are actually investigating the full tender, which might cause a duplication of effort if those are not known who is investigating what tender, so that it is not based on a payment, it is based on a particular identified procurement that was made. So, and then our comments in terms of constitutional mandate of AG is that in terms of Section 188 of the Constitution, the AG must audit and report the account, financial statement and financial management of the institution in all spheres of governance. Therefore, the additional function with respect to investigation and mandatory recovery of losses stipulated in the amendment bill may intentionally and unintentionally result in resources being diverted and focused on areas rather than the constitutional mandate of the AG. So National Treasury is particularly concerned about the function of debt recovery in the light of the huge legal personal impact it will have on the AG's organization. We have, as Treasury, identified the issue of litigation and legal costs that are incurred while we're dealing with this cost that might have an impact on the AG in dealing with the recovery. Then recovery of losses by AG. In fact, if I can, Honorable Chair, reflect, litigation against government has become a major cost that we are incurring currently. I can recall a case in the Eastern Cape where they were dealing with the issues of the Nelson Mandela funeral case. One municipality that was dealing with those cases had so much financial challenges that when they had to pay for the council members, for the mayors who were in court, the cost of legal fees became equivalent to the actual money that was supposed to be recovered for the loss that were incurred. So those, the legal costs sometimes, they rest because they are allowed until they are proven guilty to use the funds of the organization to pay for their legal fees. So in some cases it becomes difficult to deal with certain cases. In terms of recovery of losses by AG, as proposed Section 5.1b, obliges the AG to recover from accounting officer, accounting authority, any losses resulting from unauthorized, irregular, fruitless wasteful suffered by the relevant auditors, if no success explanation for non-recovery is furnished. It must be noted that not all irregular or unauthorized results in a loss. We are not saying AG was going to recover that, but we want the members to note that not all of them, and there could be value for money, therefore it will have to be unpacked as to say, what loss are you going to be recover? Though there is irregular, there's unauthorized, because there are other corrective actions that needed to be implemented. Possible duplication of roles of functionaries under the PFM and MFMA, and also those of asset forfeiture units and asset and SNU, also does civil recovery. Asset forfeiture unit currently is recovering a lot of money that also state that has been lost back to National Revenue Fund, because they want to bring it back for service delivery. It's no more about recovering it to CARA, which is the criminal recovery account. There is that arrangement between National Treasury and the NPA Asset Forfeiture Unit. Unauthorized expenditure is regulated in Section 34 of PFMA and Section 32 of MFMA. Those sections are quite detailed of how the business to expenditure have got to be considered. So the proposed amendment of the Act is not in line with those provisions. It might require those provisions maybe to be either repealed or reconsidered. Then on our comments number 5, the memorandum on the objectives for the bill sets out estimated cost per annum for the implementation of the additional funds of AGS 33.5 million. It is proposed that the AG should do a detailed cost analysis and funding proposal for the changes to the Public Audit Act. We are concerned that this amount of money, we don't know to what scope of work will be done by the AG. Looking at 33 million with litigation, with everything that will come into that, whether this is a real detailed cost analysis that will be able for AG to do that, and then also considering that there are certain complex cases that take a lot of money. From us at Treasury, we have looked at certain cases that can go up to 10 million. One case, because of the complexity and the way things have happened, that might not even come closer for AG to be effective to deal with the cases that they want to deal with in the whole of the country. But, or however, we are proposing that a formal request through the annual medium-term expenditure fund process must be done by AG with a proper detail of analysis of how they are going to utilize this proposed fund and what is incorporated in the 33 million that they have put in. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. On comment number 4, I made a mistake when I was turning the slide. Okay, I want to start at comments. So can we go back? We have printed the document. Sorry about that. I want to go to comment number 3, where I'm talking about the recovery of debt by AG. Our concern is that recovery of the debt by AG and payment into relevant revenue fund might be construed as the AG being accountable to revenue funds for completeness of revenue and might impede on the AG's constitutional independence. The AG's role in the recovery of debt may also result in the undermining of the primary function of being an independent auditor. The recovery of the debt will certainly lead to extensive legal costs and use of legal experts. It is unclear how this cost will be funded. There might also be a duplication of costs as other agencies are also performing this function. The recovery is proposed in Section 5(1)(BF)(2) from the remuneration of employees will, in absence of agreement, require a garnish order. On comment 4, audit fees 1%. The National Treasury remains committed to engage with AGS on any debt collection strategy. This part talks about Section 23(6), where AG is charging National Treasury where certain auditees other than National Department do not have adequate funds to pay for the audit fee. But though it is appropriate that changes must include in the Public Audit Act, that will improve the process that our office has been following in the past to deal with this section of the Public Audit Act, would, as a minimum, like to reduce the administration burden on both offices in this regard. It is further critical that National Treasury and AGS engage on the timing and budget for any audit fees that NT is liable for, so that we are not open to litigation and contingent liabilities that are not transparent to our stakeholders. Section 23(1) of the Public Audit Act already determines that the AG must consult the oversight mechanism and the National Treasury on the determining the basis for the calculation of the audit fee. The consultation with NT is critical to ensure audit fees are affordable, because currently we have a liability that for over 5 years was 700 million, and because we appropriated funds, because these funds are paid from the Office of Accountant General. Therefore, because National Treasury also gets its own share, so it is impossible for us even to honor the 400 million that AG is asking for those excess funds. because those are the funds that are not even available in our budget to pay over to the AG. I will repeat and go to comment 5 for consistent for continuation that I had already reflected on, where I was reflecting on the 33.9 million that maybe it needs to be checked if AG's effort to do this, is it reasonable or unreasonable to have such a fee, considering the legal fee and considering that some of the people that we have dealt with, where there is a clear cut even of corruption and fraud. We as National Treasury, one case that we paid 800,000 just to go to Constitutional Court over one finding a person was disagreeing with. So there are a lot of legal costs, and the money that was involved was just a limited amount, but because it was a case that was taken up to Constitutional Court, it came with a lot of legal costs. The Treasury had to defend it because it was challenging the mandate of National Treasury, not considering even the matter or the amount that was involved. So in terms of our proposal, National Treasury says the committee and the national concern around the current legislation that deal with unlawful types of expenditure that result in loss of public funds. After further technical discussion between the Office of the Agency, we would like to make the following proposal regarding the bill. We are recommending that referral of investigation should be limited to organs of state and not include private entities. So, because if it is a private entity employed by a Auditor General, it means Auditor General is involved in the investigation. Whereas if they are referred to the public body, that public body, that is a government organ of state, is responsible to take over, even sometimes, like if you refer to maybe SIU, refer to the police, they have their budget to execute such. The AG should only step in and force and recover if existing provisions in the PSMNA as well as institution policies or recovery of loss are not followed by the accounting officer or accounting authorities. One thing that we are also noting in addition to that, we needed to understand how AG is going to deal with cases where executive authorities are implicated and involved in terms of this irregular, because there is Section 64 of the PFMA that can exonerate an accounting officer because this was imposed by the executive authority. So this is not even covered when an executive authority gives instruction, because National Treasury, during our investigation, we have come across cases where in writing an executive authority will say, you shall do it, I will write it down, and then instruct the accounting officer to do something wrong. And in those cases, because PFMA, MFMA do not cover such to deal with executive authorities, those cases we have referred them for FPIS Act, because it's under the public protector, and the public protector has used our report in order to charge through possible premium the actual executive authority that is implicated. The case in common is the one that happened in Limpopo, where an executive authority imposed that you shall do it, even if it is right or wrong. So those issues, we don't see them covered in this public amendment act. Then number 3, if the AG issues a certificate of recovery, the recovery must be done by the relevant institution in terms of applicable legislation, institutional policies. Active participation by all relevant state order, including AG, in the anti-corruption task team is critical to coordinate and avoid duplication. This anti-corruption task team was set up in 2011. That is where on a monthly basis meets, and the cases that are on the roll that are in the status are discussed in that. That is where we think that AG referrals will be more effective when they bring those issues that they get to know during their audit, to make sure that they are coordinated within that, because in that particular forum, there is going to be SIU, there's NPA, there's Asset Forfeiture Unit, there is SAS, there's National Treasury, so, and there is SAPS. That is where these cases are known, and for a long time, I think that particular forum has been looking forward to have AG to be a feeder into that, so that those things that have not been picked by other agents or not reported as allegations, they can be dealt with. So that referral can work very well when they are referred to that anti-corruption. But the challenge is the capacity. The cases are not less than 200 that are locked there. It is how they will implement the corrective action and the required resources being available for that to make sure that they are successful in dealing with that. And then also Treasury believes that the strengthening of the framework where the accounting of accounting authority as such is responsible for the failure to recover money through additional measures in subordinate places such as regulation under the PFMA and MFMA. So we believe that we should strengthen this framework and put more regulation in terms of when people are not actually complying with the legislation. And then National Treasury supports the additional powers of AG to prescribe criteria on how to exercise its discretion when performing discretion audit and to opt out of certain mandatory audit. We believe that that can reduce the audit cost if managed appropriately. We have noted that there are small organ of state like language board, African one, which do not require AG on an annual basis. It is our proposal to be audited every year. Possible to have a plan of saying maybe every 3 years we will consolidate because of the funds, not that material that are there, than to have these escalated audit fees that will cause problems because of the financial implication and resources that are limited to the state currently because of the economic climate that we are having. That is our proposal. And then number 7, amendment of Section 26 NTRP, that is by the Constitution, it is clear that it remains independent. We should put further regulation in place to ensure that National Treasury caution is affordable, especially given the current economic climate. Currently, a process is underway to move the budget for constitutional institutions to the vote of Parliament, which can also be considered in this regard. I thank you.
Any additions? President? No additions? Thank you very much. All right, honourable members, here you have it. As we've been doing all along, honourable mention, you weren't there, so we'll start this side. We allow everybody one or two questions and another round. But if you're ready, we can start with you and come this way. Just don't want you to be ambushed. Have you got any questions from your side? Can we start this side? I'm saying that because both you and honourable Tolle came halfway through. Let's start with Singh, go that way, and then we'll come to you guys. Honourable Singh, any from your side?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I'm going to start in the end, and when you come to proposals, you say there that there has been technical discussions between the Office of the AG and yourself, and I just want to know whether you can confirm that the AG's office has engaged you with regard to these proposals that you are making. It will make it easier for us to be able to accept these proposals, although they are very valid proposals. Ma'am, I'm concerned about these cases that are hanging since 2010, you said. You first said 100 and then you said 200. Now, don't you think that in itself calls for additional mechanisms to accelerate the process of recovery of funds through maladministration and financial mismanagement? And in that vein, do you think that what is being proposed will be complementary to the role that the National Treasury is playing? Because the National Treasury has quite a role to play in terms of PFMA. But I don't get a sense personally, and I may be wrong, I don't get a sense that that role is being fulfilled adequately and effectively, unless you can convince me otherwise. The second general question, and I'll stop there and give others a chance, is constitutionality of this particular piece of legislation. Now, there was a certain metro that came along, a very big one, that tried to suggest to us that it's, what we are doing is unconstitutional in terms of 181, but we referred them to 181.4. You also referred to constitutionality in passing here. Do you think what we are doing here in terms of trying to amend the Public Audit Act and make it applicable to all spheres of government and public entities is constitutional or unconstitutional? I'll just stop there.
Honorable McLaughlin.
Thank you, Chair. I think just I have some general comments that, you know, you speak about the duplication of roles. And from where I sit, there's already a duplication. And in spite of that, we're not succeeding. The AG reported 50-odd billion rands worth of what irregular expenditure in the last financial year. That clearly indicates that there's something wrong, and something has to be done about it. So to say that there are all these things in place, yes, they're there, but they're not being utilized. As you say, there's a problem with the courts. Now, that's the first time hearing of that particular problem. But if that's the problem, then it should be addressed, but it's not addressed clearly. You know, most prosecutors want to prosecute exciting cases. They've got no appetite for monetary stuff. It's boring, it's dull. They don't want to do it. It doesn't get their name in the paper, etc., etc. So that's why these things get shouted aside. Then there should be some kind of mechanism where these things get addressed. So maybe that's where we should be focusing some of that attention. But I just felt that if the perception was that what's already in place was effective, it wouldn't be necessary to suggest these amendments to the bill. Because it seems to me that up to now, the Auditor General goes, he prepares, he does his audit, he prepares a management letter, he approaches management, says these are the problems that I've uncovered, or discovered you need to address them. And he comes the next year and says, there's an audit, and there's audit again, nothing's changed. All we say here now is, look, if it's still there in a year's time, then he can address the issue, because clearly no action has been taken, whether by that institution itself or whether by National Treasury or any other institution has the right or the power to follow up on these kind of things. So it's just trying to get this whole ball rolling, but there must be some action. Hence, from my point of view, that's where this whole procedure started, to get this whole ball rolling, because at the moment, you know, we live in a country where we seem to think that the more laws we pass, the more likely we are to have law-abiding citizens. That's obviously not the case, because we don't enforce the laws we have. We just pass another law in the hope that maybe this one will work. So we've already covered the area of recovery, and I think we've agreed in the committee that we're going to take that off the table, the aspect of the AG doing the recoveries itself, because there's obviously a problem with a conflict of interest in that regard, so that must be outsourced. However it's done, whether through existing organs of state or private sector instructions, I mean, they don't stop any municipality from giving instructions to a firm of attorneys to recover the rates and taxes that are outstanding. Why should it be any different for the AG or for the National Treasury for that matter? You know, it's part of the whole constitutional system. This is how it works. Why don't we use the system that's available to us? I'll leave it there. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Carter.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to start at the back as well. I just wanted to get on a point of clarity. Did I understand you correctly that you said that possibly reduce the audits to 3 yearly? I'm not sure if just on a point of clarity there. If that is the case, I would actually say that is problematic. As it is, we're working on samples. Let's take an example. Let's go to Spoornet, Transnet. We're talking about a sample of 500 million rand. Now, anything under 500 million, you're going to think you're going to pick up the problem in 3 years' time. Okay, it is a big problem already as it is. The samples are too high as it is. It should be a lot lower. And I actually think we should, and this is just something that we should seriously give consideration to, that samples should not be set at a certain amount, but it should be random. So that you can, because if I know that you're only going to check something that's going to be 500 million rand, then I'd be corrupt and do something at 50 million rand and do it 4 or 5 times in a year. So, you know, I think just there as well, that is a problem, especially if we want to try and do it every 3 years and not every year. Just although the... I know that this might not, but just when we're speaking about the audit fees and we're talking about the 1% of audit fees, now the AG is having a problem with actually collecting the fees. What is the chances of Treasury not paying the 1% audit fees over to municipalities, etc., but actually paying that directly to the AG? Is there a possibility of that being done? Now, although we're not going to get into the recovery, although we're not going to get into the recovery of fees, okay, I do want to just really comment on something that is in your, where you said it must be noted that not all irregular and unauthorized expenditure results in a loss. This is exactly why we are where we are today. We are too lenient. There's no consistent management. It's fine, you spend 1, 2, 3, 4, okay, you were not authorized to spend it, but it's okay, we're going to condone it, we're going to say it's okay. And this is exactly why we sit in the situation we're in. You know, there's absolutely no consequence management, there's no, you know, we've got to get past that shades of grey. It's either it's right or it's wrong. We can't always have this in between the, okay, it's fine, smack on the wrist, and yeah, just continue. I think we're just far too lenient there. I've been covered on this. Okay, thank you, Chair.
Honourable Minister?
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I just want to first clear it. The reason why Auditor General got to a point of amending the law. At this point, we have been having the PFMA, we've been having the MFMA, which you indicate to on one of your comments as well as the proposal that it should be strengthened and some areas should be repealed. Those two documents have been there and no one is adhering to them. No one complies. That's precisely the reason why we're here today. So in your proposal 2 and 3, especially on 3, when you are saying AXA, if AXA is issuing the certificate, the recovery must be done at a relevant institution. They haven't been doing it. That has been the modus operandi all along. So that's why we're here today. It's because none of the bodies, either from Treasury, the departments, the municipalities, are complying to anything. We can repeal it, we can amend it, we can strengthen it. They are not doing it. They are not doing anything. So that's why today we're saying, Auditor General, up on finding the irregular expenditure, satisfying themselves that this is irregular. And not at all times that there is value for money. You think there is value for money when people inflate prices. There is no value for money when a bottle of water, which is supposed to be 6 rand, is tendered at 150. So that is where we say Auditor General must step in. We have a problem with the imposed instructions from executive authority, and where there will be issues of litigation. But firstly, you are an accounting officer, you understand the law. The unlawful instruction remain unlawful. If your executive authority tell you to do something that you know for a fact is wrong, you have a right to say it's wrong, I cannot do it. But you do it simply because you know the department will cover litigations at the later stage, and then 3 years, 5 years down the line, then after this administration, two more administrations will find a minister that was there donkey years ago that there was something wrong done. That is why we are saying, Auditor General, pick it up, deal with it. That's actually the idea, and in fact, the imagination that I want all of us to have. We don't want to have the issues of, we have SCOPA, we have MPEC in municipalities, and all those other bodies and committees that are dealing with financial irregularities. But at what point do they deal with them? They're only dealing with after effects, it's post-mortem. It's already a year, 2 years later down the line. And Auditor General finds it now. So when they find it at that point, they must act. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Stoller.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry for being late. I caught the message very at the end. But what I had is that what I want to talk about is the lengthening of the period for the Auditor General to do his work. You said 3 years.
No, you comment after.
Yes, I would like it to be more regular because I think it helps. You mentioned the reason being the fact that we are living in very difficult times. I'm convinced that we have got enough resources as a state to deal with our issues. The only problem is the wastage, fruitful and wasted. If we can start there, fruitful and wasteful expenditure, we will not be doing. I don't like this narrative that people keep on saying, we are in difficult times. If we are in difficult times, we mustn't waste. If we don't waste, we'll have enough money. But the other thing is, that is my personal view, all our problems, lack of accountability in South Africa are due to one. I don't blame municipalities and departments and SOEs. I blame treasure. Because you see, the PSA is a bill that was introduced by Treasury. And every year, the Auditor General complains about three things: lack of leadership, lack of consequence, lack of compliance. And if you find lack of compliance one in the Treasury, case in point, the integrated financial management system. There was no compliance there. And this happened in Treasury. How do you expect the municipality to be compliant? Number two, the other one that the Auditor General complained about, lack of consequence. I haven't seen any consequence on the 4.3 billion that went down the drain in Treasury. I haven't had any. And as long as we talk one thing and do the other, we will have nobody complaining in the Republic. Because Treasury, my understanding is that Treasury is our hope, is the country's hope. Downgrading and everything, they check the Treasury. In any country, in any democracy, they check the efficiency of Treasury. You can say all the other stories, but if Treasury cannot be compliant, downgrading will come. To ourselves as the legislature, we need to check things on time. We need to be on the ground, not too much in committee where we don't meet the people, because where are we going to get the whistleblowers? Because communities will see these things. They know these things. If we hold our hearings outside Cape Town in villages, we will know about this thing. People see the change of lifestyle of a person who is earning a small salary but having five Mercedes Benz. They see this thing. But because as the legislature, we prefer to sit in Cape Town. When the tax is away, the mind play. We'll never solve this problem. Thank you.
All right. We'll get to the specifics now. Let's go through the overall. The first one, ma'am, is you know, you speak about, somewhere I was trying to look at it, you were saying one of your proposals is that the AG must get involved in the anti-corruption task team, and it might help us. In Mente's other life, she'll tell you that we call the anti-corruption task team to scope, and they're coming this week, or today, or tomorrow. I suggest you go there, and you'll hear what Singh is talking about, how nothing has happened in anti-corruption task team. Tell me of anything that has happened. I can tell you that the Hawks are going to say to you they've got 100 cases. I can tell you that the intelligence community will tell you the same thing, because we call them to scope us. So what I'm trying to say, ma'am, and it's not just the anti-corruption task team, you've raised it yourself. We're all on the same page in trying to deal with corruption. But if we have organs that are supposed to institute these things being short of capacity, we have a problem. And maybe we should put the pressure on you, because you as Treasury are saying to us, no, but the AG is out of line if he does X and he does Y. You are the custodian of it. Maybe we should be putting the pressure on you. Because we all agree the AG mustn't collect, you must collect as one option. But I think as Stoller is saying, that if you yourself are not doing it, we can't continue to do the same thing for the next 25 years and think things are going to change. I think that's what has been said on the side. If we do the same thing over again, why do we expect different results? Again, we said we're all on the same page. The other issue that I wanted to raise with you, ma'am, you know, and I think my colleagues passed it. You said somewhere here, let's talk about this 1%. And in one of your other submissions, you were actually saying that, look, we need to talk about assisting the AG in his collection. I have always argued that if you want to cripple the AG and democracy, you just don't pay him. That's what I've argued. You just don't pay the AG, and you're crippled. People that are cleverer than me in this committee have said that Treasury has an idea of audit fees before. You know beforehand that Department of X's audit fees are budgeted for so much, and Department Y and local government Y is at least budgeted. It might not be accurate, but budgeted. So my question to you, it seems that you are so keen on giving guarantees to SAA and giving guarantees to everybody else. Why is it not possible for Treasury to say that the bulk planned audit fees are X? And you either ring-fence it and keep it at Treasury, or stand guarantee for it. Because I think that losing SAA is less problematic to our democracy than losing the Auditor General. So, just on that 1%, you'll talk to us about it, because I know it's a critical issue that we need to talk to. And the final one that I want to raise broadly, and honourable members will come to the specifics, I would imagine, later, so you'll talk to the broad one. You know, ma'am, the issue that you raised around non-compliance or non-cooperation, and how will the AG, it was around the collections issue, so we've agreed that the AG is not going to do it. My question to you at Treasury is, why is it, and maybe not why is it, maybe I should put it to you differently, you indicated that you're doing lots of work in recovery. Maybe our problem is you're not telling us what you're recovering. If you came to us and you said to us, this year we're covered so much, because you and I and everybody else can go back to South Africa and say corruption was 1,000 rand, we all agree it's wrong, but so far we're doing our work and we're collecting 700 rand. Because right now it just looks like the 45 billion rand that the AG talks about, there's no money that has come back. And if we give you this responsibility, that's what we'd expect of. Because that's what you're arguing. You're arguing that it must come to treasury, and we're saying if we give it to you, then we want you to give us something back in return that says work is being done. I think this is what is being said by this side of the table. It's about consequences. It's about the money going to where it's supposed to go to and coming back from those who have taken it illegally. Broadly speaking, that's what we were trying to achieve from this side. You can talk to all those issues, and members will get into the specifics where there are proposals, but if you could just talk broadly to all those issues as a first line, and then we can take it from there.
Okay. Thank you so much, Chairperson. I will, in some cases, if I have forgotten some, I will ask my colleagues to assist me. First of all, I want to make a clarity on the number of cases. My, what I'm trying to say is that maybe we might be trying to resolve something because we didn't understand where the actual problem is. Hence, I was saying at the beginning, Treasury, since 2010, has done not less than 100 cases that means that are sitting and locked in court with other law enforcement, possibly in the register of anti-corruption. We might be having 200 cases, very critical cases. What we have observed on our side is that, first of all, in terms of commercial crime, our law enforcement agencies, they have been in the past dealing with other hard criminal cases, not understanding the commercial crime in order even to do the investigation or even to prosecute. Hence, National Treasury set up a unit. That unit at National Treasury has, since 2011, trained the prosecutor throughout the country how to prosecute on commercial crime, how to use PFMA, MFMA, and also the regulations. That has resulted in these cases that we have seen of PFMA and MFMA convictions that are currently in court. But what has been the challenge currently I'm raising is that we might do investigations. We will have many reports, but the question is in the corrective action and processing of those reports to finality. There are a lot of reports that are sitting with departments that were never processed, that we are trying as Treasury to pull and bring them, which were investigated long time ago with critical cases that were never processed. That is the area we are finding to be the challenge, that Treasury has even initiated to say, NPA, if you don't have enough number of prosecutors for this case, we will come in and assist you to train other prosecutors that are not doing commercial crime so that they can be brought in to deal with these cases, because the criminality in South Africa, it has moved from those people who are doing those hard crime, because they know that in the commercial crime is the soft part that you might not be found. So people, those that used to do hard criminal, they are moving to steal money from government and doing commercial cases. Hence, our concern is that if there is going to be no court available, the court roll is full, a case stays for 3 years, and there is not even a prosecutor. The prosecutor is saying, I'm having 10 cases, I'm alone, and the cases are dragging in court. So it doesn't matter how many cases we will investigate at the end of it, because dealing with irregular fraud and corruption is a multi-agency approach. There are certain mandates that say police will do this, NPA will do this, asset forfeiture unit will do that, Treasury will do that. So if that is not integrated and being a multi-agency approach to prioritize and deal with these cases, it becomes
a challenge to the state to be effective in so doing. Then when we when I'm talking about the multi-agency approach, hence I'm saying AG would be better off when they become a feeder to this multi, not necessary that I'm saying they must be accountable to it, to see to it the cases that they have seen, the cases that they've uncovered during their audit are actually known by the relevant authorities so that they can monitor whether they have done them or not. And also considering that we have SIU. SIU investigations, first, they take long in the sense that they need a proclamation from the president. Then secondly, they have to report to the president. They can't report back to the people who requested them to do such investigation. Then secondly, there are those legislators that need possibly AG to look at, to align to this, to make sure that it doesn't fail the referral. Because at the end of it, any case that has been wrong will go to NPA, will not even go to the to law enforcement agents. Then the process takes longer and it makes it not to be effective, even if it is referred in that. Then the other issue I was mentioning, when I was talking about 3 years, I am not saying AG must do audit every 3 years. I'm saying there are those small entities of government, like this language board, that have minimal even budget, that have got no major issues that requires an audit that can be conducted on an annual basis. It was just a proposal to say maybe AG to check the risk and see, not necessarily prescribing that it must be 3 years, just for purpose of ensuring that there is cost benefit in auditing such small entities, because they are the ones who are unable even to pay the fees to AG, because it becomes more than 1% of their current assets and their capital assets. Therefore, that is the part we are talking about that is required by National Treasury to pay to AG, because the ODT is unable to pay. It's not the whole fee, it's only that excess above 1% of that fee that goes. And then secondly, it must, the reason why we are reflecting on proposals, we want exactly AG to meet with National Treasury on an annual basis, to agree in advance, not to influence how they are going to audit, on the timing of these fees, also on the amount that will be involved, because currently AG does the audit, and then when 1% exceeded, they just come because these clients do not have money. So there is no proper planning in advance for us to know how much AG is going to charge, because we appropriated a certain amount of money for audit fees. So when AG comes to claim and ask for us to pay the fees, we don't have that money in our budget, because there is no agreement in advance of the audit with AG on the total fees that will be paid by National Treasury. When I was mentioning the issue of saying not all irregular expenditure disclosed, actually shows that there was a loss. We are not qualifying that, like there was a case that was brought to me from the Moma municipality in the Eastern Cape by the law enforcement. So can we investigate 205 million that was disclosed as irregular expenditure? When we tried to unpack how much was involved there, we found that those irregular expenditures, they come from 1998, is opening balances. Then also, when we unpack the current one, we found that they were disclosed as irregular because the advert was not done in the state tender bulletin. It was only done in other public media. Therefore, the fact that it was a non-compliance, because it didn't comply with the prescript of supply chain management. Hence I was saying, when we unpacked to find out, we could not find any laws for having advertised. But it doesn't make a accounting officer not to take corrective action against the person who contracts him. Hence, I was dealing with the part of recovering the loss, because the question of recovering loss might have been either related to payment that has been made and loss that the state has incurred, because there was well for money, the work was done there, but the non-compliance only related to how that tender was publicized, that it did not comply. And then sometimes it would say irregular expenditure came to non-compliance when a certain service provider was appointed, having not attended a compulsory briefing. All those things are non-compliance, but not necessarily resulting to a loss. Then with the question, it would be difficult if AG is assuming that possibly there will be a loss to be recovered. As much as we might have that figure that is disclosed need to be unpacked to relate exactly the loss to the state, because some of it, not that the state has lost, but it could have an element of corruption where people might have done it purposely to prefer certain individuals, which requires now a criminal investigation to be conducted than to be the recovery of the loss. That's what I was trying to explain. And then in terms of the PFMA, the Treasury is doing a lot. We have issued a lot of regulations. We are even revising the Treasury regulations currently. We were delayed with the change of ministers to sign. The new Treasury regulations have been set up to prevent, to enhance the PFMA, and there are new regulations on the MFMA that have been issued, because Treasury is also concerned, wants to make sure that there is a good framework that will prevent irregularities being done. And then in terms of I want to talk to what the Honourable Member mentioned about Treasury, the IFMS, to put on record that we are doing a detailed investigation on the IFMS. That report will come. Treasury will never hide anyone that has done anything wrong. It is not in the National Treasury culture that people can do as they like. They are so strict, I can tell you, there is a lot of cases which have been done by the Office of Accountant General against officials in the National Treasury that have uncovered certain wrong things and reversed certain tenders and make sure that those tenders do not go forward. So in terms of IFMS, we are looking at that, but I can report that IFMS is moving forward. Is part of the system that will assist the government to have a transparent financial management, so that the proper control that is built in all levels of government and make sure state funds are properly accounted. Hence, Treasury is committed that the IFMS must be successful to make sure, because it's part of the tool of government to make sure this is a success. So hence, we don't want the people who are derailing, because we are worried. We have firms that have been sitting there 40 years who have been managing our systems, which are now becoming obsolete and without adequate controls. And in the past, we had a lot of bank fraud. Cyber is coming, and it is hitting most important other countries. If we don't have a good system, we might one day wake up without the money. Hence, IFMS has got to be supported to make sure that government has got a very good system for controlling. But we are dealing with the issue of investigation. A firm has been appointed. It has started to do investigation. We are cooperating with that firm. Thank you.
All right. Let us
Let us try and structure it a bit more. Honourable Singh raised it, is out. I'm sorry, is out. Honourable members, can I take you to the proposals? And let's deal with your proposals. Your first proposal, you talk about investigation should not be outsourced. That's what you're basically saying, isn't it? Investigation should not be outsourced. They should be done by organs of state. Honourable members, anybody want to comment on that? And we'll go process by process, and then we'll come back to your other stuff. Because I think that's what Honourable Singh said. How you might have discussed this with Treasury, with AG. We were not privy to it. Just on point one, have members got any comments or questions to ask? Honourable Mente, just on point number one, only on point number one. You'll respond to it, and we'll take a decision. What you and the AG have decided, that's your own decision, but we will look at it. Honourable Mente, and then Honourable Stoller. Just everybody else. Okay, let's start there. If you've got anything on point one from Mente, this way, then we'll ask it, and you'll respond to it, and we'll tick it off. Go to point two, point three, point four, point five. Honourable Mente, just on proposal number one.
Now, on the outsourcing, Chair, then we are going to have a problem, because even all these other state organs which are dealing with criminality, commercial crimes and everything else, every time they are investigating, they have one or they do not have the other. For instance, in terms of forensic investigation, they always outsource. None of them come with the forensic investigation, and that then delays the whole lot. So I'm not sure how does it feature in terms of not outsourcing. What is it that we must not outsource? Because we do not have forensic investigation within our state organs. And in particular, where commercial crime is concerned, it becomes very difficult for them to prove without forensic investigation.
Respond to them. What we're basically asking you, no, I'm saying eventually, how did you get to that point? I think that's what members are asking. How did you arrive at that thing that says it shouldn't be outsourced? And you'll respond to it. Honourable Carter, any, just on that one? Honourable, we'll come to you just now. Let's can allow people to...
I think it's important to clarify this before we get into the matter, because it leads to what...
If you may allow me, please, Chair.
Yeah.
The reference to after further technical discussions with the officials of the AGSA, that is not known to us. I think it's important to know that so that it doesn't implicate us as having been involved in a discussion of these matters. We have not had a discussion on these matters. So I think it's important to know that it is not incorporating our views, because we haven't had a discussion on these matters.
That's fine. It's not a change to us, because you'll have your chance tomorrow. But I still think it's important for us to say Treasury has come with these proposals. Let's understand how Treasury came to these proposals. And you might want to talk to the fact that after consultation with it, but I see Honourable Carter. I don't want to get involved in whether there was consultation or not. I really don't want to get into that, but I just want to get into the detail here. We either tick them as we're in agreement with them, or we delete them if we're not in agreement with them. Because I can almost guess where you're coming from around that matter, and then it's going to divert the discussion. McLaughlin, anything on point number one? Honourable Singh, we're just talking to point one. We'll go point by point.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I was just wanting clarity. It's ambiguous to me. Are we saying that the referrals should be conducted by organs of state and not private bodies, or that referrals for investigation should only be investigated, or only organs of state should be investigated and not private bodies to investigate? Because sometimes they're private bodies who are complicit in whatever is being discovered, a third party, somebody who contracts with a municipality or a state body. I'm not quite sure what you were meaning here, whether the investigation should be limited or the investigators should be limited. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Singh on point one, if any?
No, Chair, I was just going to raise the general point about, I would still appeal that there is consultation. If we've been misled that there was, we'll accept that as a fact. But I would still appeal that between now and tomorrow, because we're on the same side. They should be on the same side. This says the same thing that the Auditor General is trying to do. So my appeal on that score is that please go and meet, come back to us here tomorrow and say we have consulted, and this is what we've agreed on, this is what we've disagreed on, etc.
It's fine. Let me just, and I don't have a problem with that. You know, whether the AG and Treasury agree or disagree is neither here nor there for me, because we're the lawmakers. The only area where I would insist that you discuss is the financial implications. But, you know, you could come and you can say on bullet point one, you say that if the AG comes to something totally different tomorrow, we'll be open to it. And at the end of the day, we'll take your view and we'll take AG's view and we'll take everybody else's view and put them in the hat. But if you can talk to make life easier for us, go ahead and do it. But for me personally, it's us at the end of the day that will take the decision, regardless of what you and the AG say. Do you have anything? Just on bullet point one there.
No, thank you, sir. I just want to ask, why did you have to get the AG to agree with you? Because my problem is they might have, the staff component might not have the capacity to do everything. They might need assistance from, why do we respect them? Why do we want to respect them on who they should meet? Because at the end of the day, do they have the necessary capacity to do it at that point?
All right. Exactly the point that I was going to raise, but in twofold. You know, the AG has come to us. When we ask him to do performance audits, the AG doesn't have quantity surveyors. He doesn't have lawyers. Are you now saying that when he does his investigation, he can't go and hire Marion Roberts, who might be the quantity surveyor? So that's the one point. But added to that, ma'am, you are saying the AG shouldn't do that. But you are very silent on the executive doing that. You go now to any number of government departments, Werksmans are doing the investigation on this matter, or that one is doing the investigation on that matter. So why is it okay that the executive can go and outsource? And you've got so many, I mean, you've got such economic power in terms of the budget. When I say executive, I'm talking about all of you together. And there's somebody that has got no money, like Parliament, relative to the executive. And you're limiting us to know, but do it with the capacity that you have. And the executive must go and get Werksmann today and get... That's what I was asking you. When you came to that decision, because I'm assuming when you talk about investigations, you're talking about part of the audit process. Because when the auditor does whatever he does, he's investigating, I would imagine, or he's auditing, or whatever the case might be. This is the issue before he comes to a finding. So maybe you must clarify that point to us, so that we also understand it. How did you get to that bullet point? And if you want to talk to the fact that after discussions you can talk to that one, but I don't want to get into a he said, she said type of argument. All right.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee. I just want to clarify, it's as the AG indicated, there's no agreement on these proposals. It's just we had discussions on a technical level with the AG's office, in particular with lawyers, and this is our proposal. There's no agreement from the AG's office on these proposals. And my colleague will continue clarifying the first point.
Okay, thank you so much. And then in terms of us saying private bodies or entity, we meant there that if AG said he will refer, because AG is saying I will refer, it doesn't say I'm going to be investigating. The bill says I will refer. So, because if you are saying you are referring, it's something else. But if you say the AG is going to be responsible for investigating, we are trying to correct AG in terms of how it has put that section of the bill. That section of the bill, when you say refer, it means you are not accountable. You are not responsible for that investigation. Whereas if you are going to have a private firm, that private firm is a
firm that is appointed on your behalf. Therefore, it is not that firm that does this investigation, it is you. You are only getting capacity of an external firm. So it must be very clear of the word referral. Like Treasury, when he said, I will not do a criminal investigation because I have no mandate to do a criminal investigation, I will refer this to the criminal investigation authorities. Therefore, it makes us not to be responsible for criminal investigation. If anything goes wrong, it will be the responsibility of the SAPS, it will be responsible of NPA. So the word referral makes AG not to be responsible per se as the auditor general, which we did not have a problem as Treasury because it does not touch and remove the responsibility of AG to be an independent auditor when it does referral. So that was the basis of that private body.
Let's just get this clear so that we all understand it. AG does an audit, picks up in his sample that bottle of water was 10 rand and yet it was sold for 50 rand. So he then says there is potential for corruption here. He then refers it. It is at that point that he refers it because he's done a sample. He doesn't have the capacity to do everything. He then refers it. You are suggesting, and I think we're all on the same page, when he does that referral after his initial investigation, he should refer it to an agency that has the capacity. That's what you are arguing, isn't it? That's what we've said. Now, where did you get the impression that we were saying that he will refer it to private investigation? Because we said in our bill, that's what I'm saying, show us in the bill. My understanding was, once the initial prima facie, for want of a better word, evidence is there, AG will refer it to a relevant agency, is what we said in our bill, or that's what we intended to say in our bill, and I'm looking at our legal team there as well. If it is unclear, then we must make it clear ourselves. But if in there it's very clear, then we must clarify. So we're not fighting with you. But if you come in and you're saying, you know what, that can be misinterpreted, we must take that criticism and tighten it up if we need to tighten it up. But the intention was after the prima facie evidence, AG will take it to the Hawks, he will take it to the police, he will take it to Treasury. That's why we were asking about the capacity of that agency. So I don't know which clause it is. I was trying to look at our clause here, but I'm looking at our drafters. If we need to strengthen it, let's strengthen it. But I think the intention is the same. Okay, that was our intention. That I don't think the AG was going to send it to Bertman or anybody else. He would have sent it to public protector, to whoever the case might be. What is it? 51A or what? What is it? Number 3. Clause 3. So it's on page 8, maybe. Page 8. Okay. It says here, the Auditor General may refer any undesirable audit outcome to an appropriate body for investigation. That's the one you're talking to, isn't it? Okay. We are saying that appropriate body is a relevant agency. Okay. So I think when we look at it, honorable members and our drafting team, that appropriate body might be ambiguous. You must say an appropriate state agency. All right. Because that was the intention. So, okay, we're all on one page of that one. The AG should only step in after, what you're basically saying there is after everything else has been done according to the PFMA and the MFMA, if nothing is done, that's when the AG must step in. That's what you're saying, isn't it? I'm trying to paraphrase what you're saying. Therefore, once the accounting authority has not picked it up or not followed it up, the minister has not followed it up, National Treasury has not followed it up, the AG then can come and say nothing is being done. That's what you're saying. Have we got problems with that, honorable member? What is it both saying currently? Oh, okay, fine. That's what I guess was in line with the fact that we were talking about collections at that time. Collections is off the table now. Okay. So total collapse of the table from the AG's point of view. So I think that one falls over. Yes, ma'am.
What I understand is that this will be the AG might issue a certificate of recovery, and that's what they're saying, that that certificate only comes once it's clear that there's no action being taken in terms of the PSMA, for example. They ordered and they say nothing is done, being done. And I don't know how long they will wait, and then they say, no, we issue a certificate of recovery.
Let's tell you what the planning is, the thinking is. AG will go and do an investigation in year one. Pick up fruitless expenditure, year 2010. When he comes back in year 2011, he's going to ask the accounting authority, what have you done about recovering that money? It's a year later. Are you saying that at that point the AG can't come and say to somebody, thou shalt do it? We are saying he must do that. That's what we are saying. A year later, if between the accounting authority, the minister, national treasury, whoever else, if they've not collected fruitless and wasteful expenditure, AG goes to the accounting authority and he says, I picked it up in year one, what have you done? He comes with an unsatisfactory answer. We say to the AG, issue a certificate. So that if you do not apply with that certificate, you are in contempt. That's what we are saying. Do you agree or do you disagree? I'm saying that's what we are saying here, and I'm saying, as long as you understand what we are saying.
Yes, we, Honorable Chair, we understand. Hence, we even came to number 5 of our group debate. We are going to strengthen the framework on their responsibility to failure to recover. Hence, we are going to put a clear framework with the details, because in the bill, it's not stipulated like that. So hence, we want to align our framework for recovery to be an instruction note. That is clear. Even that instruction can assist even AG in using that for purpose of monitoring as to this recovery. And we said in line with the PFM and NFM, because already there are provisions there of how this recovery must be done, but it needs additional framework to strengthen it to make sure it is very clear that AG can even use as a point of reference for that.
So you're not violently opposed to him issuing a certificate? Because that certificate is basically an instruction after year one. No? Yeah. Anybody wants to talk on that point, broadly speaking, just on that point? Yes, Honorable Chief.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now I'm energized and I can go. Chairperson, I think an important point was made by Treasury on the issue of Section 64, executive directives having financial implications. I think for now, our amendments have been focusing mainly on AOs. But there will be instances where the AO is overridden, and it can be overridden by written notice. What are we saying in our legislation to recover from EAs, who may already have been fired or whatever?
That's their concern also.
That's their concern also. I'm reiterating and reinforcing that concern that we need to consider it as we move forward.
Comments on that, Honourable Members? I think we all agree. If the minister is at fault, somewhere in here we should be able to say, go after the minister as well. I think that's what they think, there's a gap in that one. I'm looking at Coley and those people at the back there, so that you added Honourable Toilet, just on that point.
I think we don't have any legislation, nor the constitution, that say if somebody does wrong in a department, if he decides to resign and run away, then that person will later no longer be followed up. We don't have that. We just do. What I know is that the Constitution says what committees of the legislature can call anybody, anyone, to come and account. We do have that in the Constitution. So why are we not doing it?
If I can mention on that, I was just reflecting on the fact that there is no mention of the Ethics Act in your bill, because
if an executive authority is involved in terms of national treasury contravention of 64, we have to take that case to the public protector as the custodian of Ethics Act for determining of a verdict that that particular executive authority must be. Hence I was saying that reflection needs to be captured as to how AG, if that case comes, will act with the public protector and the issue of the certificate to that executive authority based on the results of the investigation under Ethics Act by public protector. As we have said, referral might be done to National Treasury, to SIU, and also to public protector, depending on the different legislation that is referred.
Do we want to put that in the, I'll come to you, do you want to put that into the principle or do you want to put that as a regulation? I mean, is that not the methodology of how? We're saying AG collects after a year. Now, whether you collect by writing to the president or writing to, do we want to stipulate it here is the question that I'm asking, but we're agreeing with you. My suggestion is that that becomes part of the regulation because it's the method of work, but Honorable Mente on that one?
Chair, I hear what Treasury is saying, but I have a problem because accounting officers in terms of the funds of the state is accounting officials, not the minister. So for them to take unlawful instructions and then say the minister said I must do it, they must learn to say no, and they are the ones that should be then encompassed and incorporated into the bill, not the ministers and ethics of the ministers. Those things are there at presidential level. They are not at us at the parliament level. So when we're saying then we're stretching the AG to say incorporate ethics, then you would deal with the minister. But that goes via the public protector, which can be 2-3 years later. We are dealing with the accounting officer and then the subordinate.
What's your comment to that one?
Chief, in the context of what Honourable Singh raised about Section 64, it only relates to unauthorised expenditure. So it doesn't deal with irregular and wasteful and fruitful expenditure. So the Honourable Member's comment that in those cases the accounting officer must refuse to implement if it's illegal. So I think in the context, if unauthorised expenditure results in a loss and the accounting officer refused to implement, but he gets an instruction from the EA, then that scenario maybe should be dealt with through regulation, because the recovery of the loss should be from the EA then. But I think that scenario is what you're talking about. Obviously, if there's transgressions of the ethics code, that will follow that process, but that doesn't deal with the recovery of the loss, which I understand is the focus of this provision.
So let's all be clear, so that we are clear on this one. We are saying, and this is how I think Honourable Mente and all of us have understood it up to now, anything that contravenes the PFMA, anything that contravenes the PFMA, our understanding was the buck stops with the accounting authority. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the board as a SOE or the department, that's how we understood it, that the accounting authority is where the buck stops. You are saying that that is a gap because it doesn't talk to the fact that the accounting authority might be overruled by the executive authority. I think that's what you guys are saying. On unauthorized. What's the difference between that instruction when it comes to unauthorized and that instruction when it comes to irregular? What are the differences?
The problem, my sister, maybe is the problem. Section 64 says if the EA gives an instruction which will result in unauthorized expenditure, which is either overspending the vote for a main division or program, or expenditure contrary to the purpose of the vote. In those instances, if the EA insists that the accounting officer must do it, then it must be put in writing, and then they can still go ahead. But there's no provision like that for irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful. You're in the PFMA.
Mm-hmm. Therefore, the PFMA must be fixed up, not our bill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not our bill, the PFMA must be fixed up. All right. Yeah, I think we spoke to number 5. National Treasury supports additional powers. If you support, then we are comfortable with that one. Then point 7, you say amendment to section, National Treasury agrees that as per the Constitution, it is critical that the AG remains independent. We all agree on that one. That's fine. So we've covered most of your proposals that you put on here. We'll just strengthen the one where it talks about the referrals. Honourable members, let us start this side by Honourable Tolanan, go down. If there are any specifics that you have to raise now, any other specifics that might not have been covered, you'll take note and then you'll come back to it. Honourable Singh, are there any specifics? Thank you. Honourable McLaughlin, any specifics?
Nothing.
Honourable Mente, anything that you would want to raise with these young men and ladies before we hand over to them to give us their final say? Because like we say to everybody else, it's your last opportunity to influence what goes into our bus. You've got a sense of where the people are. Honourable Mente, anything from your side? No. From my side, and this is definitely going to influence how we interact here. What are you saying to this committee in terms of addressing the fact that we have got institutional weaknesses with those agencies that we are all saying should be doing what they should be doing? Because I'm reluctant to go to Parliament and say, AG's hands must be tied, we're going to give it to the hawks. And then the hawks sit on it for 10 years. Or AG's hands are tied because we don't want him to investigate, we're going to give it to SAPS. Or we're going to give it to whoever. People will laugh at us because they're going to be saying, well, because that's where the sabotage is going to come in. So that's my question to you. Unless you can convince me otherwise, I'm going to try and convince the committee to do something else. What are you saying about the capacity of the state to investigate and to recover? Because that's been our cry, investigate and recover. Unless you can convince me otherwise, we'll have to argue that we can't continue to do the same thing. So what is it that Treasury, or are you saying it's not an issue in your life? We're talking specifically about the hawks, we're talking specifically about the cops, we're talking specifically about the NPA, we're talking specifically about prosecutors, as you were saying, that must have the capacity to prosecute, recover, and because if that happens, it deters other people from doing it. What are you saying about those things?
Thank you, Chair. What I am saying first, I want to start by saying dealing with any incidents of irregular fraud and corruption is a multi-agency approach in South Africa. There are things that we might want to do as Treasury, but because of legislative mandate, it limits. Even AG will have those limitations when it starts doing the referral. Whether AG was going to do the investigation, but if you have to do criminal investigation or even do preservation order to follow up money to get to know where the money went to, always law enforcement agents have got to be enhanced, the capability, the skills. The police that we have previously used to deal with hard criminals that are involved in murder and other things. Therefore, in this country, we need capacity to deal with commercial crime and beef up especially the NPA. Hence, I said, we have not less than 200 cases that are sitting which have got no hand to take them to the court. And the limitation of court and the time frame for setting court dates because of limited capacity in the country to effectively deal with these issues. But National Treasury has taken an initiative. First, we participated as the Office of Accountant General to develop a manual for NPA how to build up case law around PFMA and MFMO so that we can have effective convictions of commercial crime in the public sector. We have also recommended to NPA that bring those prosecutors that are actually not in the commercial crime space and be trained by the Office of Accountant General on commercial related cases
so that they can be available, because more cases are moving to commercial crime than the other crime. But those prosecutors do not have the capability to understand even the PFMA, MFMA, and Treasury and deal with those cases. Hence, I'm saying I am worried we might do everything if the source of the problem is not addressed. We will still have more cases that are fully investigated. They are adequate, they are okay, but they will be locked somewhere because the capacity in the country is not adequate to deal with them. That is my challenge. I have cases critical. They are clear cases. People should be in jail. Money should have come to National Revenue Fund. But I can tell that to date, we have managed to recover about 500 million as National Treasurer through NPA asset forfeiture of cases of fraud that happened in different departments, municipality and local government, to be brought back to National Revenue Fund for service delivered. However, there are many. We have cases that in one tender is 500 million that should have been recovered back to National Revenue Fund. But the problem is that there is not enough police for us to deal with the case. There is not enough prosecutor to deal with that case. This case has been there for 2 years. So whether AG does it or anybody else does, because of legislative mandate, there are things that you cannot do yourself. You have to rely to the next agent of the state. That is the message I would like to leave with you, to say, please, if we were all effective in dealing with issues in terms of our mandate, maybe we would not be where we are today. Thank you.
Honorable Minister, your last bite, and it will come all the way. Minister, anything that you want to say? Swear at them, shout at them, do whatever you have to do. You won't see them again.
I won't do any of it. Okay, no, National Treasury, I hear what you're saying and what you're trying to fix, but the problem is, what do we have right now in the system at this juncture, where the money is flowing out of the coffers through corruption, through irregular expenditure, through fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which the Auditor General sees every time they audit. So in the absence of everything else that you are recommending to fix, we are saying, Auditor General, deal with it now. Perhaps by the time all those things are in place, and even your system with the IFMS is in place, we can then do all those things that you are proposing. But at this current juncture, we have a problem, non-adherence, no system. IP presents cases every day, even the ones of corruption. But they are not on recovery level. They are dealing with criminal elements, SAPS criminal elements. People will be locked up, but the money will not come back. So this is the void that you are trying to close at this moment. Chair, I don't have a problem with what they are recommending, but their recommendations are for like the third administration of this parliament. They will only be in place that time. So this time we are here, we are saying, Auditor General, take over.
Anything?
Chair, thank you very much. Chair, this is not the first time in this public hearing that we've heard that the coordinating team is not working. We've heard it before. Some other people have come to. And I think we need to make a comment about it as part of our overall report, that there is supposed to be this coordinating team from the presidency that brings the AG, National Treasury, your security agencies, etc., together. So that is where issues like this can be discussed. I get a sense that they're not being discussed and they're being swept, you know, they're just being not attended to properly. So I think it's an important area that we need to focus on. And I don't know who is responsible for actually coordinating those meetings. Is it National Treasury? Who are the conveners? Who are the conveners? We need to go to them.
The problem is that it has been unstable because of change of leadership. This particular anti-corruption was supposed to be led
by the head of DPCI. So with the changes of that, it makes the ACT, the Anti-Corruption Task Team, is supposed to be coordinated. Therefore, it also requires the DPCI to be properly structured in terms of accountability, because they are not, they are within the SAPS, which possible when you engage with them, that could come in. Because if the DPCI is just a directorate within SAPS, and then the head of DPCI being the coordinator for the whole anti-corruption testing, it gives a problem because it has no independence of taking decisions as the overall charge of that particular anti-corruption testing. But generally, it is the issue of leadership, not the strategic objective of that, the charter of that structure. If it is implemented properly, we would have been too far in terms of coordination, in terms of agreement, because that is the structure that prioritizes which case must be done, allocate the appropriate police, allocate the appropriate prosecutor for the case, and the court is made available for that case, because those are the cases that are dealt. It would have worked, but it was the change of leadership, and that has affected it to be not effective as it is supposed to be. Even that is there. It works because there is also the issue that we have been doing of saying certain people have stolen money from the state. If we bring the SAS legislation, the money is taken, because some of the people, they use the same money they've stolen to fight legally. So SAS comes first. So the strategy was very clear that SAS will start recovering and make sure the money comes back to the state. And then asset forfeiture unit will use their chapter 6 of the FOCA and get the money. That's what we have been doing. That's why we have recovered a lot of 100 million in the past. But the delay is with the leadership of that particular forum.
I hear everything else that is being said, but in the final analysis, I just want us to always bear in mind that treasury is also a subject to be audited by the Auditor General. It is not an equal partner. The Auditor General has got the responsibility to look into treasury. Moreover, that we have discovered that people in treasury who are supposed to understand the PSNA and supply chain regulations do not understand or choose not to understand themselves. So because of that, we must always have a very sharp memory that these people are as fallible as any municipality in the country.
All right. On comment number 5, AG, I'm assuming that when we did this, we were doing it per the bill, which envisaged you doing the investigation, the debt recovery, and all that type of thing. There's clearly a swing away from debt recovery. So maybe the 33 million will become 10 million, or it might become 50 million. It doesn't. I'm not interested where, but I do think that we need to really look at the cost implications, because when we do our proposal to Parliament, we've got to have a cost implication of some sort. And I'm second guessing what the committee is saying, but I think pretty much we're saying that the responsibility for debt collection is not going to be your responsibility going forward. So if that was incorporated in the 33 million rand, you guys would have to adjust it accordingly. So I'm still saying between Treasury and the AG, by the time we take this to the House round about the 30th, please come and give us a figure that both of you will be comfortable with in terms of what will it cost the state to do what we would have envisaged. And we'll be able to share it with you. If you want us to share with you final draft minus one, in terms of where we're going to. We can give that to you to say, look, these are going to be the kind of areas, because that will inform the cost implication. Just two overall points from me, from your side. You know, and I'm going back to debt recovery, and we accept that that is something that is now not the AG's responsibility. But you know, we had local government come here and fight about who is the accounting authority for starters. Is it the council? Is it the mayor? Is it the city manager? That was their first fight. And then, in that confusion, nobody has collected any money from local government corruption. So if we, in good faith, go to Parliament and say it must be done by the accounting authority, we're not only talking national. What happens at local level? They don't even know there who's the accounting authority. There they said, no, if you're going to give this to the municipal manager, you better give him a risk allowance or something like that. That's what they said. If you don't, you are going to run dry of capable municipal managers. I'm saying this because you were not in that meeting. And you coming to us saying to us, no, take it away from AG, give it to the municipal manager. So you need to think about these things. Because I can't go to a clear conscience and give it to somebody who, from the offset, has said, I'm not going to do it. That's what he said. I'm not going to do it because the mayor overrules me, or council never ever takes impact seriously. So that is just the overall picture that I'm talking about. And at a provincial level, I would imagine there's a similar type of thing, because we shouldn't limit it to you here. It's province and local. How do we collect this money? If we then say, let's give it back to the state and not the AG, how do we get that money back as local government? You comment on all these things. The second one that I wanted to raise, and I'm just curious about this. You know, you were saying now that your integrated financial management system is intended to bring transparency and all those things to government, which is we all must support. But does that filter down to provinces? And I'll tell you why. Because currently in the Northwest, for instance, there's a big problem with SCOPA, because the city, or the premier, is supposedly also doing a similar type of thing. He's empowered some IT company to coordinate at provincial level. So what are we saying? Province got its own integrated, national got its own integrated, local has got 400, because it's what? What are we saying about this? Or are you moving to a direction where I press a button, I would know how much money is used for housing across government? Or is it just at national level and provinces are free to do their own? If not, how come the Northwest is currently with SCOPA around supposedly doing what you are saying here to Sotola you were doing? So those are broadly what we are saying. You guys will have 5 minutes to wrap up whatever you want to say to us, but you'll have a sense of how we're going to be talking behind closed doors. It's over to you and your team, man, to wrap up on anything and everything. It's your last opportunity. After that, the meeting will be adjourned.
Thank you so much. First, concerning the issue of recovery, we believe that if a local government certain action in corrective are not implemented, provincial treasurer steps in. It is the responsible party for issues of finance and control at local government. Hence you have the Office of Accountant General that is sitting at the provincial level that overlook and oversee both provincial department and local government. All that they are accountable there in terms of the MFNA. That is where, if there is no implementation, provincial treasury deals with that. Then, however, you must understand that in terms of the Systems Act, there are certain metros that are not delegated to provincial treasury. Those metros, they sit at the national treasury. They are accountable to the Minister of Finance at national treasury. So certain big metros that are 17 will still be required to for the corrective action to be done at the national treasury as the recovery if those accounting officers have not done the required things.
Then in terms of the IFMS, the government has got a moratorium on any province buying any other system. Remember, we have an Oracle enterprise license that will take all the fears of government. When the IFMS is implemented, it is not going to be implemented for certain party of government. It will take provincial department, national department, all of them. Hence, in the implementation of that, of the IFMS, the participation is also at provincial level. There are pilot sites that are going to be made for different provinces if we implement and phase in the IFMS. IFMS is meant to make sure that we are reporting on financial in terms of the general recognized accounting practices and to facilitate for consultation and for transparency of financial information. So as they are covered currently in the past, they will be covered. As a result, the Treasury is also looking at those provinces that are buying new systems because it will be a duplication of effort and cost to have that. As a result, some are considered to be irregular expenditure. That accounting was not account for new systems that they were buying while we are implementing IFMS.
Can I whisper in your ear to talk to your colleague in Northwest? I would imagine there's a provincial accountant general in the Northwest. Just on this matter. This is a matter of interest. I'm saying it's in the public domain. Mm-hmm. And it seems almost like it's duplicating what you say. It was brought to your attention. It's an irregular expenditure.
Okay.
All right. All right. AD, you've had the benefit of the doubt over the past week on what members are saying, on what the various presenters are saying. Tomorrow you will come and defend your bill because you guys were the originators of it. Clearly certain of these things, the move seems to be we must remove clause 5.1, add clause this, clause that. So you guys will come and talk to those type of things, convince the lawmakers. And after that, we will then go and sit on our own and hopefully come up with something that will please you, will please Treasury, will please the legislature, and please South Africa. Yeah, that's the intention. But it has to be done after thorough due consultation.
Yeah.
And we think we've consulted. You're the last one to consult. And as we say to everybody, Treasury, by the time you get back to your office, if there's something that you felt that you've left out that you should really have said to us, please feel free to drop a note to Cindy and say, you know what, maybe we didn't think about it clearly, let us further clarify it, we'll drop a note to Cindy. You've got probably until Tuesday to do that. After Tuesday, we'll not consider anything else, we'll just take whatever you got. So indicate to Cindy that, look, you wanted to clarify, this is what you thought you wanted to put in there, and you'll do that. And everybody that has been here, thank you very much for being here. Like I said, tomorrow is the last leg. AG, you and your team,
yes,
in good old chamber, G841 or something. Yeah, in the good old chamber 41 at 9 o'clock. I'm hoping that there's enough space for us. It's the only venue that Cindy can find. Christmas lights. All right, AJ and your team, thanks for being with us all the way. To our colleagues, thank you very much. Honourable members, our guests, meeting has been adjourned. We reconvene at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Thank you. Can the register be sent forward? Thank you very much.
Yeah. I don't know.